Luke chapter number 6 in your Bibles this morning. I was in the house this last week and I overheard Betty talking on the phone. She didn't realize I was in earshot, and I overheard her talking, and I heard her, didn't know who she was talking to or what the subject was, but all of a sudden I heard her say on the phone, she says, "Well," says, "Mike is a model husband in that regard." So I felt pretty good about that. I like that. A couple days later, the grandkids were over at the house, and I heard one of the grandkids say, hey, Grandma, what's a model? And I heard Betty say, "A model's a small imitation of the real thing." Kind of changed things a little bit. No, that didn't really happen. But I wonder if you're a model here today. I wonder if you're a small imitation of the real thing. We're going to think for a few moments this morning about what it means to be a model of God. To become God's model. To be a small imitation of God. To live up to the name Christian. Christ-like one. To be a model of God on earth. So that when people see you, they are looking at a small imitation of the real thing. God Himself. Jesus Christ is speaking to an amazing group of individuals. We've been going through and walking with this great historian Luke and studying his account of Jesus' life. And it was an account that he searched out with eyewitnesses and then left that account as a credible, verifiable, and purposeful account of the life of Jesus Christ. That according to Luke chapter 1, it was designed to build confidence in what Jesus claimed about himself. It was written to give credibility to the person of Jesus Christ. And we're learning about Jesus Christ through the eyes of this great doctor and historian by the name of Luke. Now, we've come to the place in Jesus' life where he has put together his dream team. He has got together a group of individuals handpicked by Jesus Christ that he has put together as a team through which he will reach the world with the gospel of his life and ministry. And he has just handpicked them. He's just put them together. And now he is meeting with them to mentor his team, to develop them and mold them. This is the first mentoring session. He chose them, and the very day that he chose them, he gathered them around him and he preached what we call the Sermon on the Mount. And last message, we just started looking at this sermon. A sermon that was Jesus' first great mentoring session with his team to explain to them how his team is going to operate. And so in this first mentoring session, he opens up the session with a description of the character of the team. You're going to be on my team. Here's what I expect from you. Let me explain to you the character of my team. And as a member of my team, I expect these things to be true in your life. And that's what he's doing. He got them around him and he began this mentoring session with laying out some important characteristics of life. Now, we started looking at them last week, and in verse number 20, down through verse number 23, we saw the word blessed over and over again. Blessed be ye poor, and blessed are ye that hunger, and blessed are ye that weep, and blessed are ye when men hate you. And then we saw that he then gave a parallel list of woes. He said, woe. Is the rich, woe are you if you're rich, and woe to you that are full, and woe to you that laugh, and woe to you that if men speak well of you. And so he gave this very strange list of characteristics. And he gave the positive characteristic, then he gave the antithesis, the opposite of that characteristic. And then he told the disciples, he made two declarations. He said, now I declare that those whose lives are emulated by this list, you are blessed. And those whose lives practice the antithesis, you are woe unto you. And then he gave the reasons for the declarations. Now, on the back of your handout, you have four charts. And they say picture's worth a thousand words, so let me cut to the quick and let me give you a reminder of what we looked at last week, because what we look at today comes out of that. And so you see the top chart, which is also up on the screen behind me, you see that Jesus compares two teams. On the left-hand column, we have the four characteristics that Jesus Christ is looking for. Blessed are, and we preached on these last Sunday, in the last message. Blessed are you that are poor. That is, you see yourselves as poverty stricken. You have nothing of value in you. You have nothing to offer God. You are no good to the core. You are a wicked sinner. You have nothing to bargain with God. You are poor in spirit. And then he said, blessed are you if you're hungry. If you're hungry for God and hungry for righteousness, if your realization of how bad off you are has developed in you a desire to be what God requires, but you can't attain it. I want to be holy, but I can't ever be holy. And you're hungry for God, and you're hungry for the righteousness of God. Then he said, blessed are you if you're weeping. If your hunger for God and hunger for God's righteousness has gotten you to the point where you weep over your sin, and you weep over the mess you're in, and you weep over your rotten sinfulness and your lack of God's holiness, and you're weeping over that, blessed are you. And then blessed are you if, as a result of this strange life of wanting to be holy, has caused the world around you to say, man, you are weird. I'm looking for all the sin I can commit, and you're crying because you're sinful, and you're crying because you're not as holy as you want to be. And they hate you, and they say all manner of evil against you. Now, that's the character that Jesus is looking for. That's what he wants on his team. He wants people that live out those set of four characteristics. And he says, he makes a pronouncement, he says, blessed are you if that is true in your life. But then he also gave the antithesis. On the right-hand column of the same chart, you see, if you are rich in your mind, if you think, I'm pretty good, and God ought to be, you know, God, I've done pretty good. I'm rich in spiritual things. I'm a pretty good guy. If you are full, you're satisfied, you don't need God. If you laugh and your life is a life of levity and life is as fun and games. If everyone in the world loves you because you're the life of the party, God says, whoa, 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 whoa. It doesn't get any worse than that. Strange list of characteristics of what God is looking for and a strange list of antitheses that God is not looking for. Now, on the second chart you have, you see that Jesus Christ blesses the team. He blesses the team because of what the end result is. And always remember, a key lesson to learn from what Christ is teaching is that it's the end result that is valuable. It's not today. It's not today. It's 100 years from now. It's life in heaven. And so he says, you're blessed if you're poor in spirit, because you're the ones that are going to be in heaven. Blessed are you if you are hungry and thirsty for righteousness and more of God, because for all of eternity, you're going to be satisfied with God. If you're weeping and broken now over the condition of our world, and the condition of your own sinfulness, and you're broken over that, blessed are you because you're going to be laughing for eternity when Jesus Christ is in control. And if you're hated by the world now, rejoice. Be glad, because you're going to be greatly rewarded in heaven. So he went through those characteristics and he said the reason you're blessed for those strange things is because of the end result of each of those in heaven. Then in the next chart, he describes the antithesis. Woe to you if you're rich now, because you're going to exist without mercy forever. You're going to be in hell forever. Woe. It's bad. Woe. If you're full and you think you're satisfied, you don't need any more of God, and you're a pretty good guy, whoa, because for all of eternity, you're going to want God, and you'll never be able to have Him. You'll be hungry without relief, thirsty without water, spiritually. Woe to you if life is just a bunch of games and fun, because for all of eternity you're going to weep for how you lived in that little short window of life on earth. Woe if the world loves you, because for all of eternity you're going to suffer as a false teacher. So in other words, in all of these, Jesus Christ says, woe to you that are like this now because of what you're going to be like in all of heaven for all of eternity. Now let me give you the last chart, and here's where we're going to stem out for this morning. I don't know if you noticed. Let's see. If you notice, it doesn't show up very good on the these are a different color than this one. Notice these top three. And your little handout, they're in a box. They're in a box. I don't know if you noticed this, but there are two categories. When you take these characteristics, they fall into two categories. The first category, if you're poor and hungry and weeping, all of that has nothing to do with anybody except for you and your relationship with God. Do you notice that? If you see yourself as a sinner that doesn't measure up to God's standard, if that leaves you hungry and thirsty for more of God and more of God's righteousness, if you find yourself weeping over the condition of your own life because you're not all that God wants you to be and you want to so much be more of what God is pleased with, all of that has to do with your relationship with God. It has nothing to do with anybody else in the world. Only has to do with your relationship with God. But the last one has to do with your relationship to other people. If other people hate you, He brings other people into the mix. Now, I don't know if you have thought about it, but the Ten Commandments are divided into what has sometimes been called by Christians the two tables of the law. The first table of the law are the commandments that have to do with you vertically in your relationship with God. And the second table of the Ten Commandments has to do with you horizontally in your relationship to your fellow man. Don't curse God. Have no other gods before you. Worship God. Don't lie. Don't steal. Don't covet another man's things. And so God divides the Ten Commandments up into the first table, which has to do with your relationship to God, and the second table has to do with your relationship to man. Now, when they ask Jesus Christ, what's the greatest commandment? What's the most important thing? Jesus Christ said, I'll tell you what the greatest commandment is. The greatest commandment is love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and soul and strength and mind. And the second greatest commandment is like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus Christ summarize the entirety of the Old Testament law into two things. Be right with God, be right with your fellow man. And he said, on these two hang all the law and the prophets. Or we sometimes say, on those two hinges, the whole door swings. The whole door of the Old Testament swings on two hinges. Love God, and love your fellow man. We hear in this list of four characteristics, this is what Jesus says. Now, you're on my team. This is what I require out of you. This is what I expect out of you. This is the character of my team. You're going to be on my team. This is what I want out of your life. And he listed three things that have to do with loving God with all your heart and all your soul and all your strength and all your mind. But then he added one final thing that has to do with loving your neighbors yourself. Hey, by the way, could I chase a little rabbit for just about 15 seconds? A little bit of political philosophy. Our Baptist brethren who were put in jail in Europe and murdered in Europe and who were beaten here in America and thrown in jail here in America, our Baptist forefathers fought for the freedom of conscience. And they said, as a government, you cannot judge me on the basis of the first table of the law. You can't judge what I believe. You can't tell me I have to believe what you believe or you're going to throw me in jail. You can't tell me that I have to believe what you believe or else I'm going to be punished by the government. You can only put me in prison for the second table of the law. What I do with regards to my relationship with other guys. Young ladies, right here. Ladies, please. Thank you. Very important message. You got to get this today. So, politically, freedom of conscience was won in America because our Baptist forefathers recognized that while you can judge a person for what they do in actions towards their neighbor, you cannot judge people for what they do in their mind towards God. We're losing that in America. That's what hate law is all about. That's what all the hate laws are. Somehow, if a person's murdered because you hate them, it's worse than if you murder them just because they got in your way. But you know, if I've been murdered, I don't care if you murdered me because I got in your way or you murdered me because you hate me. I'm still dead. But somehow in America, it has been determined that what you believe in your heart is fair game for judicial action. You've got to be careful about that. We're losing our liberties in America. So, back to what Jesus Christ is dealing with his team. What are you in relationship to your fellow man? What are you in relationship to other people? Do you model how God treats people? And that's what we come to in our text this morning. Verse number 27, Jesus Christ said, "But I say unto you, love your enemies." And Jesus Christ begins to expound upon this fourth character trait. How you react when people hate you. How you react when they say bad things about you. How you react when they do bad things to you. What is it that comes out of your life by reaction when you are abused by people? And I've got three words for you from the text this morning. I want to introduce you to the structure, and some of it we're going to pick up on next week to look at a couple of the things that are said. But I want you to pick up the structure in three words. The first word is the word behavior. God expects a certain behavior out of his team. If you're on his team, he expects you to behave in a certain way. Look for it. Look at it with me in verse number 27. In verse number 27, Jesus said, "But I say unto you," by the way, he says, "But I say unto you which hear," not everyone hears. Jesus was talking to a crowd of people, and some of them were tuned in, and some of them were tuned out. Some of them were listening, and some of them were thinking about other things. Some of them were focused on what Jesus was saying. Some were sitting in front of him and focused on something else. An usher once told me that when he counts the attendance on Sunday mornings and goes up into the balcony and looks down and counts the attendance, he said, "You'd be amazed how many people are texting during the sermon." He says, "You can tell from the screen that they're not reading a Bible app." Some are. Some are reading Bible apps and taking notes of the sermon. But he says, "You'd be amazed how many people are texting during the sermon." Jesus Christ had that problem. He had people in front of him that were listening, and he had people in front of him that were sitting there that were not listening. And we have that here today. Some of you are listening because you want to know what Jesus expects out of you. You are hanging on Jesus Christ's every word. Jesus is going to say, "This is what I expect out of you if you're going to be on my team," and you are all ears. Other of you aren't listening to things being said. You're just waiting to go through the process of being in church so you can get out. Jesus said, "Now let me talk to you that are listening. For you that are listening, for you that hear me, this is what I say to you. Love your enemies. Do good to them which hate you. Bless them which that curse you. And pray for them which despitefully use you." What? What is Jesus Christ saying? How am I to treat these people? You mean my enemies? The people that want to destroy me? The people that don't like me? The people that are fighting against me? How am I supposed to treat them? You mean I'm to love them? What? People that hate me? People that can't stand the ground I'm walking on? I mean, they just don't like anything about me. They hate me. You mean I'm supposed to do good things for them? Buy them a Christmas present? Send them a card? Shovel their driveway for free? You mean I'm supposed to do good things for them? Come on, they hate me. Jesus said, I'm telling you what I expect out of your behavior. If you're going to be on my team, this is the character of my team. Here's what I expect out of you. If you have an enemy, I expect you to love him. If you have someone who hates you, I expect for you to do good things for them. But how about people who cursed me? I had somebody just cursed me out. I expect for you to bless them. How about people that despitefully use me? That means that they take advantage of me, or they lie about me, or they insult me, or they falsely accuse me. Their treatment towards me, their words that they say about me are done with despite. And they lie about me, and they insult me, and they put me down, and they spread rumors they know aren't true because of what they think about me. What am I supposed to do for them? I said, I want you to pray for them. What? This is bizarre behavior. Who lives this way? Nobody does that. Yeah, they do. People on Jesus' team do. If they're on the first string. If they're quality players on the team. If they're the ones he depends upon. The end of the fourth quarter, on the 1 foot yard line, 2 seconds left in the game, behind by 4 points. The one that the coach says, give Leroy the ball. You see, Jesus Christ players on his team that he depends upon, they do live this way. He expects it. He requires it. You can't be his team player if you don't behave this way. Jesus expects his team to play to a higher standard of ethics and character than the team that they're playing against. You know, in the sports world, it's the guy that reacts that gets the penalty, right? You do me wrong, I'll do you wrong, but I'm the one that gets caught. In Jesus' world, his team plays to a higher level of ethics. They obey the rules no matter how dirty the other team's playing. They play by the rules no matter what the other team's doing. You say, well, that's not fair. A team can't win against another team if the other team's playing dirty and you play by the rules. Take that up with Jesus. His team wins. And he doesn't break any rules. He plays by the rules. And his team wins. I've read the last of the book. Jesus requires that if I'm on his team, that I behave with the character that he requires me to behave by. Wow. I don't know, Jesus. Someone that is my enemy, and I've got to love them? I love my friends. Give me a break. But love my enemies? Buy a gift? Take flowers to the office to the one who just kept me from a promotion because they went in and told the boss a pack of lies that they knew weren't true, but they did it because they wanted their friend to get the promotion instead of me, and I know what they did, and you tell me that I'm supposed to take them flowers and pray for them and bless them and wish them a good day? That's what Jesus said, black and white. That's what he said. Do good to those who despitefully use you. See, if you're going to be on Jesus' team, he requires a behavior that is bizarre in the eyes of the world. You know, someone came up with this thing, random acts of kindness. You've heard of random acts of kindness. Matter of fact, if you Google random acts of kindness, you'll find all kinds of websites. 85 random acts of kindness, ideas to inspire kindness. 29 ways to carry out random acts of kindness every day. The Random Acts of Kindness Foundation. Wikipedia even has a whole thing about random acts of kindness. It all started in 1982 when Ann Herbert heard on the news the phrase random acts of violence and senseless acts of cruelty. She heard that phrase and she wrote down on her placemat, "Practice random kindness and senseless acts of beauty." A few years later, in 1993, she published the book, Random Acts of Kindness. And it became a craze. Random acts of kindness. Well, I don't know what the latest craze is. Something about pay it forward or something. My wife was in a drive-through lane for a hot chocolate a couple weeks ago. And when she got up and got her hot chocolate and she went to pay for it, they said, sorry, it's already been paid for. Whoever was in the car in front of you paid for it. She looked and didn't recognize the car, didn't recognize the people. They were already pulling out, and 5 seconds later, they were gone. Someone paid her for her hot chocolate. Just a random act of kindness, or whatever the cliche is today. Now, I want you to know that's not what Jesus is talking about. He's talking about doing that to the person who just cost you a promotion. He's talking about doing that for the person that just cussed you out. He's talking about doing that for the person that just told you they hate you with all their guts. You see, this is off the charts behavior. This is how you treat the people that hate you the most. And Jesus said, if you're going to be on my team, this is the behavior I expect from you. Here's a second word. Second word comes in verse 31. I know I'm skipping some verses, but I want you to see the structure here. See, in verses 27 to 30, Jesus Christ says, this is what I expect. And he laid down the behavior. This is what I expect. It is the outgrowth of that last character trait. And now, in verse number 31, he boils it down to a principle. The principle is this: and as ye would that men should do to you, do ye also to them likewise. This is a principle to live life by every day. Now, someone help me out. What do we often call that? The golden rule. Do unto others as you would have others to do unto you. Jesus Christ took this behavior pattern that he requires, and he boiled it down to a life principle that you can print up on a card and put on your mirror. Something that you can memorize and have in front of you every day. This is a practice principle, or a principle that God expects you to practice every day of your life. In every situation, the principle is simple. How do you want to be treated? Then treat other people that way in the same circumstance. Do you want people to give you another chance when you blew it? Then give other people another chance. Do you want people to cut you some slack when you've done wrong? Then cut people some slack when they've done you wrong. Make this the general principle that you live by and practice it every day. How would I want to be treated if the roles were reversed and I did to them what they just did to me? In my wildest dreams, how would I want them to treat me? How would I want them to react to me? And then do that for them. The principle of the golden rule. And then the third word. Here's the third word. It's the word motivation. The word motivation. You see, if I'm going to take the behavior that Jesus Christ expects and live it out, if I'm going to take the principle of the golden rule and make that the principle of my life every day and the way I treat people, what is going to motivate me to do that? What is the push behind that kind of bizarre action? What will motivate me to do those things? You'll notice that verse number 32 begins with the word, help me out, four. Jesus Christ is now going to advance his argument for this bizarre behavior. He's going to advance his argument by saying, do it for this reason. Do it for this is what's going to result. He advances his argument by giving us an understanding of what ought to motivate us to live that kind of a life. And what is it that should motivate me? Well, verse number 32, Jesus Christ says, "For if you love them which love you," verse number 33, "and if you do good to them which do good to you," verse number 34, "and if you lend to them of whom you hope to receive," Jesus Christ said, if you only love the people who deserve to be loved, how are you any different than an unsaved person? If you only do good things for people who do good things for you, how are you any different than an unsaved person? Most wicked people will do that. Most wicked people will love the ones who love them. Most wicked people will do good things for the people who do good things for them. How are you any different than a wicked person if all you do is love the ones who love you? That's a good question. What thank have you? Why should God be impressed with you? Verse 34 says, if you lend to them of whom ye hope to receive, what thank have ye? For sinners also lend to sinners to receive as much again. Verse 33, for sinners also do even the same. Verse 32, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. You see, Jesus Christ expects us to be better than unsaved people. He expects us to live better than people whom He has never placed His Holy Spirit within their body to indwell them. He expects more out of us than He expects out of a person that's never been born again. What ought to motivate me to love my enemies, to do something nice for someone who just really messed up my life? The thing that ought to motivate me to pray for the person who just cursed me out. The thing that ought to motivate me to live this bizarre behavior is because Jesus Christ expects His team to live better than people who aren't on His team. But that's not where it ends. There's more to it than that. Look at verse number 35. Verse number 35, but love ye your enemies, do good and lend, hoping for nothing again, and your reward shall be great. Here's the second motivation. I'm motivated by the understanding that God expects better out of me than He expects out of the unsaved. Okay, I get it. The unsaved love the ones that love them. I need to exceed that because the Holy Spirit lives within me. God has changed my life. I'm being conformed to the image of the Son of God. God has changed my life. God expects more out of me than them. Okay, I get that. But second, you will be rewarded in heaven. You know, in eternity in front of us, you're going to be glad you loved your enemies. Because payback is going to go on for eternity. You're going to be glad that the person that cursed you out, that you blessed them. The person that cost you that job promotion, you're going to be glad that you went out and bought them a gift. You're going to be glad because payback is going to go on forever and ever and ever and ever. Jesus said, that's a reason you ought to live that way, because I'm going to reward my team for doing better than sinners. But then there's a third one. And this one I think is the most important. Verse number 35, he says that great your reward shall be great and ye shall be the children of the Highest. And ye shall be the children of the Highest. Now, what is this all about? You shall be the children of the Highest. Now, granted, this is not about how to become a child of the Highest. Rather, this is how people will know you're the child of the Highest. It's kind of like down here in this world. About the greatest compliment a dad can get is when His Son is like Him. A hard-working dad who grows up and sees his son work hard. That's about as good a compliment as a dad can ever get. An honest dad that always told the truth and always was fair in his dealings, who sees his son in his adulthood honest and fair. That's a great compliment. It's true of women as well. What greater compliment of a woman than to see her daughter grow up and be just like her? A woman who excelled as a hostess in the home, who sees her daughter in her adulthood excelling as a hostess. A woman who sees her daughter living out the character qualities that daughter saw in mom day after day and year after year. Now in adulthood, mom sees that daughter being just like she was. That's as high a compliment as you can ever get. When your children pick up your quality of life. And that's true of God. By the way, the reason it's true of humanity is because we were made in the image of God. Our humanness, our human family relationships were patterned after our family relationship with God. Now, the son that is just like his dad, being just like his dad didn't make him his dad's son. It wasn't how he became his dad's son. It was a reflection of the relationship he has with his dad. Such a strong relationship that he picked up the values and the quality of his dad. And now he's living out the quality that he saw in his dad. This is not how to become the son of the dad. This is how to live your life so that everyone knows you're just like your dad. That's the way he treated people. That's the way he lived. You're just like your dad. And that's what Jesus Christ is saying here. What ought to motivate me to love my enemy is the reality that when I do, I'm reflecting the quality of my Heavenly Father in my life. That I'm loving my enemy because He loves His enemies. That I'm praying for those who despitefully use me because He prayed for those who despitefully used Him. I am becoming a model of God in South Riding. So that when people do business with me, when people rub shoulders with me, when people have interaction with me, they see a little imitation of the real thing. I'm not God, but I can be an imitation of the real thing. I'll never be the real thing. But I can be a model of the real thing. I can be a Christ-like one, even though I can never be Christ. And that's what motivates Jesus' team to practice this bizarre behavior of loving enemies and doing good to those who hurt us. Because we have the awesome privilege of modeling to our office, modeling to our family, modeling to our community, modeling to anyone who we cross paths with what Jesus Christ is like. And the reason I treat people the way I treat people is because that's how God treats people. So Jesus Christ said at the end of verse number 35, "Ye shall be the children of the highest, for He is kind unto the unthankful and the evil." Aren't you glad He is? He's kind to evil people. He's kind to unthankful people. Verse 36 summarizes it. "Be ye therefore merciful as your Father also is merciful." The bottom line is this. Mimic your Father. Mimic your Father. The world is waiting to see a team that are living out the characteristics that Jesus requires of His team members. And if Jesus' team is going to be effective, it will only be effective to the degree that the members of the team fulfill their expected behavior patterns that Jesus laid out when He mentored the team. This is what I expect out of you. And to the degree that we become that, we will be effective in influencing Northern Virginia for Jesus Christ. If we don't reflect those characteristics, we will be ineffective as a church family. So, are you pulling your weight for the team? When you're hated and pushed away and ridiculed, when you lose a promotion because of some jerk, when you get cursed out on the highway, what do? Do you act like unsaved sinners? Or do you act like team members of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords? He's looking for bizarre behavior. Could you do one last thing before I close? One last thing. Could you, in the little empty space at the bottom of your little worksheet there, that little empty space, could you write down the name of one or two people who have lied about you and hurt you, who have hated you, who have cursed you? Who have made your life miserable. And then out beside it, write down what God wants you to do in reaction. And will you step up to the plate and be a team player on Jesus' team that fulfills His expectations? Wow. That's hard. That's hard. But it's required of the team.